The Pat Kenny Show.
With the Jaguar E-Pace. Beautiful by design and dynamic to drive. Delivering performance that is unmistakably Jaguar.
This is News Talk.
Do you ever feel overwhelmed by the sheer amount of medical do's and don'ts that come your way in the media? One day your favourite food is good for you, then the next is going to guarantee an early grave. Now, you could be forgiven for thinking that nutritionists just can't make up their minds. Well, Mike Gibney is a Professor Emeritus of Food and Health at UCD, and he's with us once again. And he is also attending a major European nutrition conference in Dublin from today until the 18th, the main theme of which is malnutrition in an obese world. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, what are we to do every day in media, whether it's on a website or in a newspaper or on telly? There's a story about food that's telling me something's bad for me.
Yeah, well, since the dawn of man, since man could start to write, people have had strong views about food, because food is something that directly affects their lives many times a day. And people want to be healthy. And so they if they are told a piece of attractive information about food, they will tend to believe it. So we have superfoods that come, superfoods that go. So a while ago,
and then dark chocolate is good for you.
Oh, all of that, but all of this is really spin that's well above the science. The science is, if you like, a stratum below this, which remains fairly constant. It's the fashion of gurus on nutrition, popular writers of books that explain everything, that, you know, that food will do this, that and the other. They're the ones that keep changing the media story.
Yeah, but the media are to blame as well, because there's no point in, you know, a story that says, for example, that cereals in the morning are good for you. That's not kind of news. But if you tell me that 10 eggs a week will prolong my life by 5 years.
Yes.
Now, that's the one
news
we all jump on.
It's man by its dog. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the media are to blame. I mean, but then again, they're the same with all sorts. I mean, that's what people want. They want attention, and they want to be entertained, so to speak. But it is a shame that in some of the serious newspapers, like the New York Times, I think, is a rag when it comes to nutrition. The Guardian is a rag when it comes to nutrition.
So these are highly respected liberal newspapers, but on nutrition,
they take an agenda that is fashionable, a kind of leftish.
Okay, so is veganism good or bad according to them, I wonder?
Oh, perhaps good, I don't know. But I mean, I haven't seen what they've written, but I've seen what they've written on other things, and they tend to be very off the wall, I think.
Fish oil's good, bad. Say almond milk versus cow's milk.
That's going to be a big debate, I'd say, at this conference. This whole idea of plant food versus animal food, and how it's going to affect.
Yeah. So the question is it that nutrition research is less rigorous than other research? We have Luke O'Neill in here. He'll be talking about cellular biology.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll test things, and there'll be blind testing, and there'll be all sorts of things laid down in the protocols.
Well, there's two types of nutritionists, and nutrition research. I've been involved in both all my life. And one is laboratory based, where in our case, it wouldn't be rats we'd be dealing with. It's human beings we'd bring into a clinic. We'd give them a test meal. We'd take blood samples every 30 minutes. The following day, we'd bring them into a physiology clinic. We'd measure their heart rate. We'd measure their body composition. We'd measure all sorts of things. So we can gather a lot of information about human beings in an experimental situation. That's pure science, yeah. The problem is then, when you want to go out and say, why are Irish people getting overweight? Now you have to deal with a population of people, a population that's going to be, it's going to be confounded by income, it's going to be confounded by education, by smoking, by physical activity, by genetics and what have you. And so it's very easy for somebody in a laboratory, particularly Luke, my good friend, to start studying the molecular biology of immunology in a cellular system where everything is isolated. But you want to talk about allergy in human beings. That's a completely different thing.
Yeah. And then there's the anecdotal stuff that people will maybe misrepresent what they consume every week.
This is a huge problem when you come to study dietary patterns, in that there's this phenomenon called underreporting. So on average, between 40 to 60% of people in a survey will underreport. Now, what does underreporting mean? It means, Pat, that you tell me you have an energy intake or you have a food intake and we calculate the calories. And as far as I'm concerned, the only way that's compatible with life is that you're lying in a coma.
Because I'm taking so few calories in.
Yes, it's just compatible with your breathing and your heart rate and so forth.
But
your
meantime,
basal.
I'm robustly well.
You're robustly
so
well.
I'm lying.
Well, you're misrepresenting your normal intake because people, my reading of this is that people start on a Monday morning and they say, listen, I'm going to eat well, I'm going to eat healthy. And they do a great job until Thursday when the boss gives out to them or the mother-in-law is coming to visit them or God knows what, and they go off the wall on a Thursday. So when you ask them, would you eat your... take part in a study and have your normal diet. It's the Monday version you get.
not the
real one.
Yeah, not the burger and fries and a milkshake and the 7 pints then.
7 pints and the pizza on a Thursday or Friday night.
Now, what about unreliable messages? Because there are people in whose interest it is to spread the message about, for example, their product, that it's, of course, it's good for you.
Yeah, I mean, the food industry is an enormous lobby and it advertises and it has all sorts of promotions and representations, and it's a very powerful lobby when it comes to things like the World Health Organization making decisions or government making decisions. And to some extent, I have sympathy with them in that they're faced with an opposing view of, in some cases, based on very solid science. So they're going to have an uphill climb there. But in other cases, they're faced with, if you like, fashionable science, science promoted by celeb chefs, by celeb models, by celeb film stars, and even by celeb scientists. Now, some of these scientists have had some sort of a scientific career, but they're not top drawer. But they've written books. They've appeared on television.
They have some credibility with the general audience.
Yeah, the way to detect them is how much do they charge to come on television? If they charge a fee, and they have a big fee, like, I mean, I've asked some people to come to conferences. A guy from Harvard, he wanted 60,000 to come to Dublin to talk about climate change. Good night, you know. but these are celebs that create the waves. And
Now, you're saying, though, that some universities, because there's the people who do the science in the universities, and then there are the administrators who want to get their college in the newspapers.
Absolutely. It's a terrible problem in that the science does a bit of work. You're supposed to report all your papers to the communications office in university. They see it and they say, oh, gosh, this is good news. And they spin it. And they spin it so differently from
the pure science
that there's a website you can go on, and every single week they produce two or three of these examples where the University of Boston has issued a press release, and it's saying that, you know, something about diet and health, and it's all done with rats that are genetically modified or something like that. It bears no relationship to.
Now, then there are the activists. You have food activists like you have the anti-vax people.
Yeah, there's a lot of food activists, people who are concerned about, I mean, for example, the whole area of carbohydrates versus fats and the keto diets. I mean, you've got a massive group of activists there that are constantly on the internet, constantly on Twitter. And that's just one example. You have others that are concerned about the environment, others that are concerned about the welfare of animals, others concerned about the integrity of the soil and so on.
So when we do get conflicting information from nutritionists reported, you know, week in, week out, month in, month out, or year in, year out, that seems to conflict. I mean, is that a battle between pure science or is it just the opinions? I mean, is it rigorous for someone to say, Mike Gibney says X? Pat Kenny then says, hang on a second,
no,
Mike's work is a bit dodgy. I'll have a go at this and I say why.
Yeah, well, let me explain one thing. Underneath all of this, I said, there's a bedrock of good science. Now, if recently I had the chance, I was asked to look at the Nordic Council of Ministers dietary recommendations. That's from Norway, Sweden, Denmark and Finland. And their expert committee came up with a set of dietary recommendations and I had a look at these. I looked at the first ever set of dietary recommendations in the world from the United States Senate Select Committee on Nutrition in the 1970s. They are identical, except for one thing. Salt, the levels of salt recommended today are half what they were recommended back
in
the
1970s. But otherwise the same. Everything's the same.
The sugar targets are the same. The fiber targets are the same. The saturated targets are the same. Everything is the same. So when people say nutritionists change their mind, they don't. The hard core of nutrition It's still there. And basically, the advice for people is pretty simple, you know?
Yeah. But if you're stuck with eating processed food, don't panic, I presume.
No, I mean, processed food, cheese is processed, wine is processed. I mean, you have to be very careful what you mean by the word processed. A bread is processed. It didn't grow on wheat stalks in a sliced pan, like, or, you know, a bagel. So everything is processed.
All right. On that note, Professor Mike Gibney, thank you very much for joining us. And Mike will be appearing at that conference, the main theme of which is malnutrition in an obese world.